What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, where you'll find out what the Fukushima's going on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show, hour number three. And joining us on Skype right now is Tom Kozacinski. I hope I pronounced that correct.
Thanks, Mike. Kozacinski is correct.
Kozacinski is correct. Okay. And Tom here is the author of a book, After Trump, How Nationalism Can Save America. And a mutual acquaintance basically asked me to get Tom on the show, and he sent me a copy of the book here. And it does ask a very important question. Right now, with Trump in office, we're seeing populism and nationalism gain ground in this country. But what happens after Trump leaves office? And the left basically tries to reimpose their vision for the future of the country on us. So, Tom, why don't you just give us a little bit about yourself, your previous books, and why you wrote the book?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. So my earlier books were Someone Has to Say It, The Hidden History of How America Was Lost, which was about looked at the last 100 years of what had happened in America and how, you know, Marxism really took root in a lot of different places. My second book is called The Coming Civil War, and it's kind of a difficult, darker book, but it talks about the challenges and the cultural battles happening between the left and the right, and the basic argument that, you know, you can't have culture divided against itself and stand. And that's really what led to After Trump, which was people challenged me to figure out a way to figure how we could have success in the future. And it turns out the key isn't that complicated. It's to embrace nationalism and to really move away from the sort of way of thinking of things where you're going left versus right all the time, although I do lean right myself, but more to a way of thinking about things where you root it in what helps our people rather than what system works best. And I specifically say this with regard to the Republicans out there, because so often they've been in love with free market ideology or a form of libertarian thinking that hasn't necessarily been so effective. And Trump sort of showed a different way in that you could reach out to workers on a pro-America message and really have the capacity to build a much larger tent that's maybe shaped a little differently, but actually holds together quite better. So I put that together as my third book this year. And just to give a little more background about myself, I previously had worked as a town manager up in Maine, and I ended up losing my job about a year ago because I had said that I did not think Islam fit very well in America, and I had made a number of other politically incorrect comments. So I've had a very interesting year in terms of putting things out there, but I've also had the time to think now and offer some ideas that I hope are helpful to asking this important question, which is that while Trump has changed the paradigm, what we don't see is a Republican Party that is shifting to match him as quickly as it should be.
Yeah, that I've noticed that. But then I'm not surprised, given how during the 2016 election campaign, the GOP was never really supportive of him. You know, they were pushing originally Jeb Bush, but he kind of flamed out. Then they were pushing Ted Cruz, even though technically he can't be president. And they were pushing, you know, the traditional insiders, the good old boys, the parts of the network. And Trump basically came out of left field as an outsider, which was his attraction to the voters. And so the GOP didn't support him all that much then. They're not really offering him much support now. And it's another example about how the personal animosity seems to be trumping any other agenda when it comes to members of Congress making any decisions.
I think so. And I think even more deeply than that is there are permanent interests that work to make sure the parties never fully represent the interests of the people. I mean, for a very long time, the Republican Party has really been beholden to its donor base, who gives us candidates like Jeb Bush who want open borders and low taxes. And it might be a little bit not generous to say this, but even when you look at Trump's first 2 years, his signature policy achievement was a tax cut that any Republican would have been happy with. And I think a lot of people, myself included, are disappointed that he didn't work more firmly for action on immigration before, because now that we have a Democratic House, it looks very difficult to achieve that.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. I supported Trump by which I mean mostly I didn't want Hillary to get into the Oval Office. But I have to be very honest and say that Trump has been a bit of a disappointment. Now, I know he's been preoccupied with all of these incessant ongoing attacks on him from the resistance, the Russiagate stuff. He's definitely in the hottest kitchen in the world right now. But he's failing to deliver on the promises he ran on. He's trying to deliver on immigration, which is why the same Democrats who 5 years ago voted for a border wall are now voting against it. They don't want Trump to have any political victories going into 2020. They are willing to just sacrifice the country itself to maintain their grip on power.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Democrats today is they really, you have to question what their loyalty to America is. And I say this not as a light accusation, but because of the fact that they literally want to give more rights to non-citizens than citizens. You look at overwhelmingly Democratic states, how they run sanctuary cities, how they provide social welfare for illegals, and how they refuse to have law enforcement protect the people of this country. And when you look at the voting patterns across different groups, and you see how many of the illegals, as well as legals who come here, actually end up voting Democratic, you begin to understand why they're fine with having as much crime as necessary. These people are their voters, and they are not going to go ahead and speak against anyone they can bring in here. And it's sort of a scary and difficult thing to reach a point where one party explicitly now is embracing what I consider to be a replacement strategy rather than fighting off what is an invasion. We see caravan after caravan in the news being actively fostered, I believe, by some of the NGOs like the Soros Open Borders Foundation, bringing these people up here, and yet no one seems to want to do anything. And to me, that's the craziest part of the whole thing. You know, the Republicans are kind of sitting on their hands a little bit. Trump is making some noises in the right direction, but frankly, I would see this as an emergency. And I will tell you, I was hoping when he had that speech, that evening address about 2 weeks ago now, he was going to say something more forceful, because I don't understand how you can say something's an emergency and then we're not going to do anything about it for 2 or 3 weeks because there has to be a process. It's either an emergency, in which case it demands immediate action, or it isn't. And I think Trump's failure, in my mind, is that he's tried to play within a political system that was designed to destroy people like him working within it. And in these last 2 years, he's going to have to figure out a new strategy, or it's going to be extremely painful up until what I think will be an unsuccessful 2020. He has time, but he needs to be much more decisive.
I agree with you on that one. The sense I get is that Donald Trump is easily manipulated. He's been convinced to surround himself with a bunch of neocon advisors who can talk him into and out of whatever they want. And I think a perfect example of that would be Trump's announcement a while back of a troop withdrawal from Syria. And yes, we're going to bring them home. Then immediately 24 hours later, they started waffling and said, well, there's no real timeline. It may take a while to happen. Then we had that obviously staged false flag bombing. And now this whole idea of a Syrian troop withdrawal, not to mention the Afghan troop withdrawal, is now off the table. I know that Trump is susceptible to flattery, and he may have been a great real estate mogul. He may have been a great reality TV star, and he certainly said all the right things in 2016, which you expect a candidate for president to do. But unlike so many others in the independent media who are still out there saying, there's time, at this point, Trump is a disappointment. I'm very disappointed in him, and I'm in agreement with you. He's going to be a single-term president if he even gets to the end of his first term.
It's a sad to say that, but I mean, you look at someone like John Bolton coming in here, and that was really a red flag, as well as, you know, the other people who he surrounded himself with. It seems like Trump has good instincts sometimes, which he doesn't follow because he has bad advice. And I've noticed one other thing, which I don't know if you'll agree with, but he tends to look at business like a company. And the problem is it isn't. I mean, government ultimately has the ability to do things businesses don't. It uses compulsory force, whether we think that's good or bad. It's true. And when you have someone working for you in government, it's not like where you're CEO of a company and you can fire anyone and just deal with the consequences. But you have these permanent bureaucracies with their permanent interests, and you know, you can't just put someone on top of them and expect them to follow you like a division. I mean, I think, in my own opinion, the biggest failure Trump had, and the cause of so many of his other cascading problems, was Jeff Sessions was absolutely the wrong choice for attorney general, and that led to the Mueller investigation, which has led to this incessant sort of, you know, Chinese water torture by the press, where they've always been able to go at him. And well, the press was always going to do what it was going to do. They don't need a president in there who's going to make it so easy for them to go ahead and, you know, consistently paint this case that, you know, enlivens the opposition and degrades his own core supporters.
Well, I think one of the reasons for the media hysteria is that Trump really hasn't given them anything they can work with. Mueller has found no evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. They had another embarrassment today where this Russian hooker who was arrested in Thailand, she got sprung from jail because she claimed she had evidence of the Trump-Russia collusion. When she was out of jail, she said she just made it up. And I think one of the reasons we're seeing all of that is, despite all of the investigation and all of the digging, they haven't really found anything on Trump. So all they can keep on doing is just coming out with more and more of these lies, like this ridiculous BuzzFeed story that claimed that Michael Cohen had testified before Congress that Trump ordered him to lie to Congress. And of course, Mueller's office came on out, blew the lid off of that one. The corporate media had leapt on board that story and they ran it everywhere because, oh, they so wanted it to be true. And now, of course, they're having to back up and try and wipe the egg off their face and pass the blame to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, the media obviously went with a ridiculous story, although the one thing I do worry about with that particular case is I don't want to give too much credit to Robert Mueller in this case, because While I think it's good that he went out there and said that these accusations were categorically false, I am not prepared to invest that much confidence in someone who's been a deep state hatchetman for a long time. I mean, this is the guy who wrote the 9/11 and commission, you know?
I'm not sure why Mueller did it. It may have been simply the fact that he thought somebody might be ready to leak Cohen's testimony out. And so he decided to basically seize the initiative and get the story out there before he would be embarrassed by it.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. But the thing that bothers me is, like, even though I agree with you that there's no credence to most of these claims, at least as much as we could tell, and at this point, if there was anything, I think we would know about it. I have no doubt that, say, Hillary had won in 2016, there would be investigations happening of every Republican in America. And that's
absolutely
what bothers me, that, you know, that Trump has never seemed to figure out how to wield the bureaucracy, because, I mean, it's a gun, let's be honest. It's a gun that gets pointed at someone, and at this point, he's kind of letting it be pointed at his own head. And that's the problem. Either get rid of the gun altogether if you think it just can't be saved, and maybe that's the case with our deep state and some of these people who are in those agencies. I certainly made that case in my second book, The Coming Civil War, that we have a government that's no longer responsive to the elected officials whom it is supposed to serve. But if you're not going to do that, you need to at least make sure you're not constantly being the source of your own investigations. I mean, how many things with the Clinton Foundation could we have been investigating? All these NGOs, why can't we look at human trafficking, which we know is happening with these caravans, that there are children coming up who are with people who are not their parents? And yet, our deep state seems completely unconcerned by that. We can't get the FBI to look at it. We can't get anyone. And frankly, I don't understand why Trump doesn't go in there and just keep firing people until he finds someone who will do it. I mean, maybe that's a simplistic version of government, but I didn't vote for someone who would play games like Jeb Bush. I voted for Trump because I hoped he would take a stronger, more decisive executive stance. And to this point, we just haven't seen that.
No, we're all still waiting for that Donald Trump that we saw on The Apprentice, where he's out there saying you're fired. But again, that was just a TV show. And again, there's this huge bureaucracy. And to my mind, Trump's single biggest mistake coming into the Oval Office was he wanted to be magnanimous in victory, and he allowed all of these Obama holdovers to keep their jobs. And they immediately went to work on him, trying to get other advisors into position who would basically corral Donald Trump and steer him in the desired direction. They're still afraid of him. That's why they're trying to get rid of him. But right now they've got him under their control. What Trump should have done is he should have realized that government doesn't operate the way a business does. And just because you're the boss does not mean your underlings are loyal to you. He should have basically pink slipped everybody, brought in all new people from outside the Beltway. You know, there's no law that says only people inside the Beltway can hold the inside the Beltway jobs. What they do with those jobs, there are talented, capable people all over this country who could take those jobs, and they would come in without those compromising connections. They're not linked to the Clintons. They're not linked to Soros. They're not linked to the CIA, and that would be the kind of staff Trump would have needed to have. But unfortunately, he made that mistake, and I think it was the biggest one that he did, and he can't undo it.
I agree with you, Mike. I mean, you would think that someone who ran such a large company would understand better the importance of staffing. And this is the one thing that gets me with people who are out there always saying, well, we have to believe the absolute best of what Trump's doing. At some point, any leader knows they have to take accountability for the people they hire, the people who are underneath them, or if they inherit people, the people who they've retained. And I think you're asking absolutely the right question, which is, what do we do with this? Because Trump needed to get rid of the wrong people. So when we ask the question, where we go after Trump, I think the failures of Trump are instructive about what has to happen for the next nationalist who comes along, if we're fortunate enough to have one. And that is to have someone who goes in there decisive, bringing people in from outside the Beltway, from who don't live in Fairfax County, you know, or Prince George's County, and who can go in there and bring a new take on this that is not, you know, what the political class wants. Because I think, as we've seen, the Uniparty remains very strong in a lot of ways. And, you know, with the Democrats, you know, the level of insanity that they're proposing and that their base is going to demand after Trump, I think we've reached a point of polarization where we should go out there more forcefully, make the cultural arguments that Trump has made very effectively, that people want to live in America that isn't governed by political correctness, with sound economic stewardship and a plan to seriously roll back the deep state and the powers it's allowed to implement over this country.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. One of the things that I think illustrates Trump's weakness as a leader is apparently he was listening to William Barr's confirmation hearing in Congress. And apparently when Barr came on out and said that he was good friends with Robert Mueller, apparently it took Trump completely by surprise. And so my response was, does anybody in the White House not know how to do in-depth research on somebody before they're nominated to a key government position? And I can understand that Trump himself might not sit there at the keyboard and do the digging, but certainly somebody on his staff should have. And maybe they did, and maybe it simply wasn't shared with Trump because they want William Barr in there, because he, too, is another one of these cover-up artists. He was linked to Ruby Ridge, definitely one of the deep staters.
Well, that, you know, that's the problem. I mean, you sort of wonder if the mandarins around him are creating a bubble where he doesn't even know what's happening. I mean, let's look who he's had. Rince Priebus, who was his first chief of staff, who was a Republican Party hack. And then we had John Kelly, who was, you know, lauded by the media as a responsible voice, which is usually a tell that he's on their side. And at this point, it seems like, as much as anyone, maybe Jared Kushner is the one who serves as an intermediary, who's the informal chief of staff in a lot of different ways, who's yes. controlling what gets to Trump. And, you know, I don't think he understands half the problems out here. You know, I'm out on the a little bit farther on the right than some people, some of the things I post. And what Trump doesn't seem to know is we're fighting a war against censorship right now, where yes. the First Amendment is under attack. And I'm sure Republic Broadcasting deals with it, too. I talked with John about it. It's just, it's absolutely crazy. And yet the Republicans don't talk about it. They don't know anything. And at the moment the media piles on, they will gladly signal against anyone to their right. But you never see the left do that to their own. They don't eat their own.
Okay, Tom, we got to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back.
Extend your life with When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last 2 decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendivite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The 7 herbs in Extendivite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendivite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendivite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working 2 jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. We're talking with Tom Kaczynski, author of the book After Trump, How Nationalism Can Save America. Well, I think we're both pretty much in agreement that Donald Trump, either because of his own personal weaknesses or because of the machinations of the deep state, has been rendered pretty much impotent. And I think this whole standoff over the border wall, it's all about political chest thumping, and it's not really about immigration or protecting America or any of that. And as you mentioned before, the Democrats want the open borders because they want those Democratic voters to just pour on in. And if you look at this resolution they just introduced in the House of Representatives, it basically guts all protections against election fraud. We had, back during the midterms, Democratic leaders openly saying, yes, we count on the illegal immigrant vote to win. Well, illegal immigrants aren't supposed to vote. So we have a government that is itself gone outlaw, and definitely does not follow the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which to me means the U.S. government has already made itself illegitimate, and now we just have to sort of figure out a way to limit the damage. I don't have any expectations Trump is going to reverse the trend for the remainder of his term in office, and I do think he's going to be a one-term president.
Yeah, Mike, I increasingly I find myself agreeing with you. And what really terrifies me more than anything at this point is that in the desire to make a deal, he makes a bad one on immigration where, you know, for this $6 billion, which won't even be enough to even fund the wall, certainly not the wall that was promised. And from the best estimates I've read, where it would be somewhere between $20 and $30 billion, not enough to fund the wall at all. He might offer, you know, amnesty to the DACA people. He might offer a wider amnesty. And, you know, as the government shutdown continues, the drumbeat is going to get louder. And frankly, I think it's fine if he keeps it shut down as long as he needs to. This sort of confrontationism is his best bet. But I don't see him actually doing that. I just don't think he's going to have the gumption, probably as much as anything, because as I think you sort of hinted at, but maybe didn't say explicitly, is he cares a whole lot about the media thinks. He'll see something on TV and he'll follow it. I sometimes literally watch like a show on Fox News and watch Trump's opinion match what he saw on TV and then see something the next day and watch his opinion move again. And it's one thing to be responsive to the news cycle. It's another thing to be driven by it. And I'm just sort of disturbed at his lack of leadership on some of these topics.
Yeah, that's a good observation that you made there. And I mean, Trump is already signaling he's willing to compromise and soften on the border wall. And he doesn't seem to understand that Schumer and Pelosi are smelling blood in the water. They don't want a compromise. They want total capitulation for political gain. They want to make sure that Trump has got nothing to run on going into 2020. They're going to campaign in 2020. Look, Trump didn't do anything. He promised you this. It didn't happen. He promised he was going to clean up the election system. That didn't happen. He promised he was going to look into vaccine safety. That didn't happen. He promised he was going to control immigration. But again, this immigration issue, this is Schumer and Pelosi who want those borders open because it's a guaranteed source of Democratic voters. And for the midterms, you know, these illegal immigrants, they get funneled into congressional districts that are just slightly red, with enough people being sent on in to switch them to just slightly blue. And that's what happened out in California. That's why California Republicans lost so many of their seats in the House of Representatives. California's always been traditionally a red state, a GOP stronghold. And now all of a sudden it's been turned blue. And the reason is very obviously, as you called it before, it's a replacement strategy. Right now, there is a media war against white heterosexual males. And meanwhile, of course, all of these refugees and immigrants are being welcomed in with open arms. They're being treated by our government, or let me say the government, better than that government treats our own legal American citizens, especially our homeless veterans.
Absolutely, Mike. And it's not just a problem down there. You know, I live up in Maine and we recently elected a Democratic governor up here to our dismay. She's expanding Medicare benefits. And you know, there's 40,000 Somali refugees or, you know, descendants of who live up here who were deliberately seated up here to change what is actually a much closer state electorally than people realize. Now, we're not a very big state. Maine has about 1.1 million people. And what, you know, a group like that who votes as a bloc can be decisive in changing things, where we had elections that were lost by 10, 20,000 votes. And all the benefits are going to them. And meanwhile, we live also in the oldest state in America, where now people who live here can't get social welfare benefits because there's not enough money in the government and the money is being prioritized to the non-citizens. It's an absolutely disgusting thing that, you know, nationalists should be able to call out. And one other thing I want to add to bring back to the point you were talking about voting is we should be able to have some sort of federal legislation that requires voting with proof of citizenship, some form of identification at all polling locations.
We used to have that. We used to have that. Back in 2016, Democratic lawyers went all over the country declaring voter ID laws were racist. We have to take another break for commercials. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Okay, Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on. Can't get no work, can't draw no pay. Unemployment getting worse.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. We're still talking with Tom Kaczynski about his book After Trump, How Nationalism Can Save America. And I think we've talked about Trump himself and his shortcomings. I want to get into the nationalism issue. I'm looking through the index of your book, and the title of chapter 3 leaps right out at me. The GOP must fight the culture war with equal force. And I will confess I haven't actually read the chapter itself, but I think part of the problem, of course, is this is not right versus left, Democrat versus Republican. This is nationalism against globalism, and unfortunately, there are a lot of members of the Republican establishment who've been caught up in this frenzy to build a globalist government. And so that's why support for Trump has been very soft. He is seen as anti-globalist, pro-nationalist. Remember when he first came out with the Make America Great Again hats, they were declared as racist. And as we saw over this last weekend, people wearing those hats are being subjected to violence and harassments in the streets of America. So let's, why don't you tell us, I mean, first of all, what exactly is nationalism? And then we'll get into what are we going to do after Donald Trump is gone?
Nationalism, in its simplest terms, is the philosophy that the purpose of government is to put its people first. And it sounds really simple, but it's not what we actually practice. If you think of what at least how it's described, the political split in America for quite a while now has been described between people who basically believe the market and smaller government is best, which is the right, and people who believe the state and larger government is better, which is the left. And what I'm arguing is that the left has transitioned, as you said, and I think rightly, to a global sort of institutional approach to governance, which doesn't look at borders as anything but something to work within a larger international matrix, and that is in love with this system. And their core concept is they want to equalize outcomes between countries around the world and to use government force to impose those outcomes. What I say is that nationalism, from a rightist perspective, should stand against that. Move beyond this idea that, you know, our societies have to be the fulfillment of a system. Sometimes state solutions do work. Sometimes market solutions do work. But what's more important is that we ask this question, that is what we're doing working for the interest of our citizens, and to recognize that the responsibility of our government is to look out for the American citizens and not to be looking out for the welfare of the world. Not that we have malice for other countries or that we wish them poorly, but we recognize there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. There isn't a massive institution. And where they are universalists, it turns out that nationalism is a form of particularism, right? That yes. creates peace, because you can admit if someone thinks differently than you and has a different faith and a different belief structure, and they have their own country with their own borders that is separate from you, you can live in peace because you dominate here in America, they dominate there in places they live. But the problem today with multiculturalism, and this is why I talk about culture in this book so heavily, is that all these different versions of truth are superimposed on top one of another, on top of one another, in such a way where it's impossible to make any good judgments, where it's impossible to have any sort of values, and it's impossible to serve the interests of your people because you're told you need to serve the interests of everyone. And the American people deserve better than that, especially the people on the right who are your traditional people. Men don't deserve to be, you know, me too'd out of any job as an accusation. Heterosexuals shouldn't be punished for living according to their beliefs. Whites should not be targeted for, you know, being paid for everyone else in this country. But all of these things happen because no one has been willing to say, well, who are Americans? What are we fighting for? And why don't we just work for our own citizens, not this aspirational coalition of who we're supposed to come, where we bring in everyone from around the world, but the people who actually built America and the generations of immigrants who came not for a welfare check and a free house, but just an opportunity.
Well, you know, and those immigrants all came in through the legal immigration system, and I don't have a problem with that. One of the issues that we need to keep in mind is at the core of liberalism is the belief that it is a one-size-fits-all solution that can work. And of course, it really doesn't. We can see that from the increasing tension between the liberals, PC warriors, social justice warriors, and everybody else. It sounds like a really good idea, but it doesn't work. And that's because human nature is going to be human nature is going to be human nature. And that is something liberals absolutely deny. And this, of course, goes back to Margaret Mead's book, Coming of Age in Samoa, which laid the entire academic groundwork for liberalism by saying that, yes, if you change the environment the person is living in, you can change how they feel, how they think, how they feel. But Mead's book was a fraud. It's been discredited many times. But yet that idea that if liberals simply change the environment enough, everybody will be happy, that's really what's behind all of this political correctness and social justice warriors. They're trying to change the environment. It's something they think everybody can be happy in. Of course, it's making them happy. They're happy in it. But for, as you mentioned, the heterosexuals and us white males and a lot of other people, we're not happy in it at all. We're not allowed to live our lives the way we see fit. And it's not like we're going on out and being, you know, violent or anything like some of these liberal activists are. We just want to be left alone to live our lives the way we see fit.
And And the problem with that is, if we're really honest, we have been in flight for 60 years. I mean, look at every major city in America, dominated by Democrats, and not liberal Democrats, progressive socialists. Let's be very blunt about who runs these cities. And most of them have been in states of decay, high levels of crime, all sorts of different problems. And we have retreated to the suburbs, and now we've retreated to the country. And what I think we're reaching is a point where we need to get out there, articulate an alternative, stop apologizing, stop being afraid of labels. I mean, I've been called every label in the book. I'll tell you the truth, I'm on the hate list of the SPLC, the ADL, and I've been called every name on the book just because I said Islam isn't compatible with Western civilization, a religion whose founder practiced pedophilia, who, you know, currently practices female genital mutilation. And in fact, I'll tell you something even crazier. Up here in Maine, they had a bill before the state house to ban that for the protection of women, something you would think the left and its feminist supporters would want. They blocked it. And it's absolutely crazy, but they have become so beholden to this universalist belief and this victim culture where you have to allow anyone to do whatever as long as it isn't part of the traditional group. And I think people are just so sick of it, and they want people to stand up and say, hey, these are my beliefs. Call me what you want. I'm not going to let your labels stop me from succeeding. That's how Trump succeeded. And if he had followed through, I think he would have been a great president. But it's indicative of how we need to succeed going forward, which is we need to wed nationalism with populism, where we go ahead and serve the interests of the people, speak to the things they're concerned about, find legitimate answers, and stop bringing in these people who do not belong here. And I will say something that I take as a stronger position than some. Frankly, we need to stop legal immigration, not because the people who are coming here are bad, but because we haven't integrated any one of the 40 million residents we currently have living in the United States who are not born here, because we don't even have a culture of our own to defend anymore.
And we don't have an economy to even support them. It's just a huge, huge drain. And again, we're seeing the Democrats, they don't care about any of this. They don't care about the contagious diseases being brought in. They don't care about the increase in crime. They don't care about the rapes that are going on. All they care about is having these illegal immigrants who can be counted on voting demographic to cement their hold on power. We're going to turn into a single political party state like the former Soviet Union. The GOP, they're just going to fade away. And I'm sure at the last second, you know, they'll switch over and say, oh, well, we're going to join, you know, with the Democrats. And it'll be one party, one country.
If you look at where the voters are coming in, what's happening with the 2020 census, including the recent ridiculous ruling, you can't ask if someone's a citizen and determine the allocation of congressional votes. But just look at where the people are, how the votes are changing and demography changing. We're about every 4 years, the population due to immigration and birth rates is getting 3% more Democratic. Come the 2028 election, we will not be able to see Republicans win elections at the national level anymore. People don't see this because it's a lagging indicator. But if you just look at simple demographics, who is in this country right now, the numbers of people and how they vote, you know, and you do doing it by race, honestly, is the fastest way, even though it's unpopular. Whites vote more or less 50-50. They vote about 60% for Republicans, although Jews vote 70% for Democrats. They're an outlier. Hispanics vote 2 out of 3 are going to vote for Democrats. 3 out of 4 Asians are going to vote for Democrats. 9 out of 10 blacks are going to vote for Democrats. And that pattern has been consistent since 1980. Yet the Republican Party goes out there all the time and promises to be the same sort of cultural message that the left puts out there. We're going to give you free things. We're going to give you affirmative action. We're going to do that. And Americans are ready for a different message, I think. They're ready for a message of fairness saying you earn your keep. It's a meritocratic message. It is not a prejudicial or racial message, but it is a message that does not give things to other people. And what we need to do when we do that is also say, we will defend your values and we will not let you be called a horrible person, a racist, a bigot, a xenophobe, whatever term you want, for speaking common sense. Because at this point, and I think you'd agree with me, Mike, we have criminalized the use of reason when it conflicts with social engineering that they're trying to practice.
I do agree. I do agree. We've entered a period where calm, rational analysis is being discouraged in politics, in the media. I mean, look at some of those whopper lies they've tried to feed us over the last few weeks here. Even in our schools, critical thinking and analysis is being de-emphasized. It's all about believing the slogan, believing the jingoism that's on out there. And our country is basically being taken over by sloganeers.
Well, and the thing that's really horrible about it, as we see over and over again, and this goes to the totalitarianism you were mentioning, is any problem the government creates, they suggest the solution is more government and more government agencies and more government intervention in our lives. Like, it's a parasite that feeds on itself because it's trying to realize an irrational goal. Equality in human society has only been created through one of two ways: abject poverty imposed through violence, or death. Because people are unequal. We are different. The best thing about us is that we are distinctive individuals with unequal talents. And instead of being a society based on opportunity and the assumption of excellence, which is something where we can build ourselves to a better place, we have accepted this idea that we are only as good as the worst among us, and that we have tried to make everything like the worst among us. We celebrate a pop culture that is entirely degenerate, and we don't even offer an alternative because it would be to be judgmental or discriminatory. 100 years ago, those terms themselves were seen as positive attributes of men who used reason and judgment in accordance with nature, as our founders did, to make wise decisions. But we were engineered away from that. You know, America has become something where the inmates are running the asylum. And you just look at things. Like, I was reading recently, the American Psychological Association was saying masculinity is toxic now. They're attacking fathers for going ahead and teaching boys how to become men. When is it going to stop? You know, when are we going to kick the trannies out of the girls' restroom? Someone tell me, please, because I talk to a lot of people, and people are begging for this, and our political leadership says, oh, we can't do that. The media will kill us. Well, the right doesn't trust the media. But the problem is these people in D.C. live in such a bubble. Even the people who we elect, they go there and they forget where they're from. They forget that message. And I think that's what we need people to say. Nothing radical, just the historical wisdom that everyone has known and everyone in their heart still knows. Only a few people believe these crazy things, but no one's willing to articulate the counter argument because if they do, they get attacked, they get labeled, they can't get jobs. And you know, people need to understand how awful this machine used is, but also how thin a veneer it is. It's very well funded, but it's not popular. It's not loved. People want to laugh. People want to celebrate what is good. And I think in this book, after Trump, I start making the case for how we get there, which is just to talk honestly, because one truth can reveal 1,000 lies. And that's what we got to start doing.
Well, I'm in agreement with that one, certainly. And it does feel like our society is fracturing apart. And again, I don't think this process is proceeding the way the liberals and globalists who dreamt it all up is actually working or was going to work. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing all of a sudden this more intense push to go after white male heterosexuals. And you're right, this idea that masculinity is toxic, and they're literally out there saying that we have to teach young boys to be more like young girls. And that's not going to work on out.
The other thing, too, is watch any commercial on TV. They're teaching young girls to be like young boys. Every girl is an athlete. Every girl is out there physical. And I watch a guy on TV. The only time I ever see a white guy on TV is if he's a doofus or he's carrying around 6 kids like the wife used to do. And that is no accident. People need to understand there is a deep engineering project happening here to conflate everything into being like everything else so that we can't make judgments. Like, for instance, the other day I was watching people having a debate about whether it was okay for a 7-year-old who was identifying as transgender to get sexual therapy. And I was like, why aren't we missing the point that we're sexualizing a little kid? But they put so many layers, and this is cultural Marxism right out of the Frankfurt School. They use language in ways that confuses the intellect and reason, where you end up arguing these nonsensical things that are so far to the left, you don't realize all the points you've conceded along the way that remove you so far from rationality, you can't comment. And I think that's why so many people have just given up on politics. and have become apathetic because no one ever made a moral stance on just the simple thing that there are certain things that are just true, whether we like them or dislike them, but we like to pretend that we can make anything whatever we want it to be and that that's truth. And if you set a fiction at the heart of your culture and society, which is the problem of Western civilization in America and in Europe, frankly, how are you going to hold it together? And the answer is, even if a barbarian came in, someone who came from the third world, and I'm not saying this to be mean, but who just recognizes up is up and down is down, well, that's how you lose a civilization, to decadence where you don't even have a connection to reality anymore. And our people need to get real very quickly, because if they don't do it now, when the left takes power, they will force you to do so on their terms.
You're absolutely right about that. We have to take one more break for commercials. We'll be back with the last segment of our program after these few words.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far a 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show. How we're finishing up now with Tom Kaczynski and his book, After Trump, How Nationalism Can Save America. And I was perusing that last chapter about what happens if we fail, when you were talking about some of these countries that plunged into Marxism and how badly they fared. And I noticed where you made the statement that if people are not allowed to keep what they earn, that they stop being producers and they start being recipients. And we're seeing a lot of that happen across this country right now. But in the end, it all comes down to a situation. Who's going to pay for it all? If everybody is on the government dole, where does the money come from?
Well, you know, the funny thing about that, Mike, I think, is when that happens, nobody pays for it. What happens is people start taking, and what will start, they'll start with is the easy stuff. They'll take the money that's out there, any money that's saved, you know, they'll start selling buildings. I mean, we've seen cities go into decay. It's a good example of it. They start selling off their valuable assets to go ahead and pay for things, and then they sell off the non-valuable ones. And pretty soon it gets to the point where no one's being taken care of. And that's where we will go. We will get to a point where the people who can afford to leave will. The people who can't will stay and they'll stop doing things. And we will reach a point where America, which we used to be a wonderful first world country, will succumb to something terrible. I think a good example for people to look at if they're not familiar is South Africa, which was a prosperous first world country in 1980 and now has declining standards of living, has regularized institutional violence. Some would argue white genocide happens there, that land appropriation bills are being put where literally land that has been privately owned for hundreds of years is being stolen, and where I think last year they almost ran out of water in a city that sits on a river, which just shows you how crazy it's getting. But this is what happens. You end up with Potemkin villages when you place ideology above production and you don't allow people the opportunity to keep what they earn. I think that, unfortunately, we are going down that direction. You look at someone like Ocasio-Cortez, for instance, who's arguing we need a 70% tax rate and that we need to have a Green New Deal that has no energy production, but that instead goes ahead and pays for health care for everyone. Well, I don't know how you bake a pie out of nothing but hopes and good dreams, but that's what these people think. And I don't blame them because they were raised in an education system that never introduced them to the idea of reality. Many people, as in politics as it was to say, were raised by parents who either weren't there or maybe one parent, by schools that gave them substandard education without the ability to think, a common core curriculum that's designed to teach you to function at a minimal level. And people don't know any better. And unfortunately, we now have an ideology where that which most people support, we consider to be the best solution. So instead of choosing excellence, we choose numbers. And it's the old saying, if everyone jumped off a bridge, would you do it? Well, we're going to find out here in America unless we change real quick, because everyone looks like they're putting their diving caps on to me. I wish I was more optimistic, but it's just it's difficult to look out there and feel happy about where things are going, you know? If anyone's interested in my books,
okay,
please
I'm
check
here.
Me
I'm
out
here.
At nationalright.us. I appreciate that, and contact me at tom@nationalright.us. My books are available on Amazon. And Mike, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for being on the air today. And that's the end of our show. Stay tuned for John Stadmiller. I'm sure he's got lots of interesting things to share with you. Please take what you learn here, share them with everybody else. Please donate to RBN. Donate to whatreallyhappened.com. Have a good rest of Martin Luther King Day. We'll be back tomorrow. Aloha, America.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on. And learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.